Welcome to Enlightened Radio this morning, folks. Good. All right. All right. Welcome to the Labor Beat Radio program, sponsored by EnlightenRadio.org. JB Christensen and myself did this for almost 10 years on Shepherdstown Radio Station, and then we moved to the internet, and then somehow the pandemic and everything else caused us to have a lengthy break, or me anyway, and so we're trying to do it again, and we've been doing pretty good here the last two or three weeks. And my good friend and comrade from many years ago, and all lifetime here, Scott Marshall, from the Steelworkers in Chicago. He's been on a number of our programs here as well a long time. So, if I say something that goes too far back, you know, he'll remind me. You know, so anyway, so welcome, and I want to welcome Seth DiStefano. Is that it, DiStefano? All right, DiStefano. From West Virginia Budget and Policy, a West Virginia think tank, you know, for the labor movement, progressive movements, and in general, and just a reservoir of wisdom and knowledge now for ever since I've been in the state, which is, well, about 2003, and I came back because my mother and my grandparents are all from West Virginia. But in any event, I want to welcome Seth to the program, and of course, because I yesterday read your piece on what's happening to the volunteer fire departments in West Virginia, and of course, that's just one of many articles on the West Virginia Budget and Policy blog about the impact of the current budget and tax situation coming out of the recent legislative session and the domination of the state by a version of the Republican Party. I probably have 15, 20 questions I could ask Seth, but I don't know which one to go first, and so I'm going to try to see if he could open up for us a little bit this morning on the impact of the tax budget debacle, fiasco, whatever that came out of the legislature on working people in particular and the labor movement too. So welcome, Seth, and thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you all for having me. Yep. John, JB, Scott, it's good to be here. My name is Seth DiStefano. I'm the Policy Outreach Director for the West Virginia Center on Budget and Policy. Just as some background, we are a nonprofit, nonpartisan research and advocacy organization that has been in West Virginia for over a decade and a half. Like, we didn't just show up last week. We've been around for quite some time. We do research and analysis. Our bread and butter is around tax and budget. We also are, deeply involved in issues impacting workers' rights. We are firmly believe not only in the right to collectively bargain, but the only way for workers to get a fair shake in this world is through a union. And that's just the bottom line. We do a lot of work around the safety net. These days, it's more about protecting the safety net so that when, people fall on hard times, there is something there to support them and their families. And just to kind of kick things off, I think that, you hit on a very pertinent issue in that these budget gimmicks that the governor has been putting forward for a couple of years now in order to convince the legislature and try to, convince the people of West Virginia that we have all this extra money and that things are doing great in West Virginia, and we can afford these massive tax cuts that overwhelmingly benefit the wealthy. These budget gimmicks, these chickens are coming home to roost. And one of the clearest examples we have right now is the funding crisis being faced by our volunteer fire departments and emergency squads across West Virginia. And so just as some data for you, right, so that we deal in numbers here at the center, and we believe that, numbers are how we hold ourselves accountable and others accountable for that matter. The National Fire Department Registry, which is a part of FEMA, which is where fire departments register, right? So, we know where all the fire departments are. They categorize fire departments in four separate ways. There is volunteer, there is mostly volunteer, there is mostly paid, and then there is paid. Those are the four categories. So according to the National Fire Department Registry, what percentage, I'm gonna put this out to the three of you here, what percentage of fire departments in West Virginia fall in the category of volunteer or mostly volunteer? John, what do you think?
90%. Okay, I got that from your chart.
I think. I'm gonna say 95%.
Okay, Scott.
I can't be outdone by any of them. 98%.
It's just over 95%. And thank you. Thank you all for reading my blog. It makes me feel good.
I only got a B plus on my score there.
To kind of expound on that those 95% of volunteer, mostly volunteer fire departments, are the first responders for 85% of West Virginians. And they are very clearly running out of money and are facing closures, both volunteer fire departments and emergency squads around the state. This is a direct function of holding budgets flat, right? State budgets flat. When governors come in and say, specifically Governor Justice, this is, I believe, the fourth or fifth state budget in a row that has been held flat, or essentially the governor comes in and says, you will start the fiscal year and you will create a budget for the fiscal year, which starts on July 1st, that you're not allowed to spend any more money than you did the year previous, or the year previous to that, or the year previous to that, or the year previous to that. This is creating serious problems across, not just with our first responders. This is, you know, creating very serious issues in child welfare, right? One of the reasons we have the worst child welfare crisis in the country can be directly attributed to flat budgets, holding budgets flat and not making realistic decisions on what you need to staff properly when it comes to social workers, when it comes to CPS workers. One of the reasons we're having significant difficulties out your way there in the Eastern Panhandle, staffing public schools with full-time teachers. I know this is a frustration of parents, beyond political affiliation. Parents in the Eastern Panhandle are frustrated that there are a lot of long-term subs that are staffing schools as opposed to full-time career-minded teachers who want to spend 30 years at Musselman or 30 years at Martinsburg High. The reason being is that, you know, our governor and to an extent really our state legislature is they're holding budgets flat and they're not increasing salaries to be competitive with neighboring states, right? If you're graduating from, you know, West Virginia University or Marshall or any of other institutions of higher learning in West Virginia, you're graduating with a master's degree in education and you can literally, you know, live in the Eastern Panhandle, but make double what you would in West Virginia by just crossing over the border into Maryland. Why wouldn't you? Right. And so, you know, this comes back because these budget gimmicks that I'm talking about that are leading to these problems that we're seeing right before our very eyes are part of what has made room for this quote unquote artificial surplus, right? That's one of the factors holding these budgets flat. There was a big hiring freeze for quite some time that, you know, until I believe it was Senator Trump of all people called out the governor because the CPS situation had gotten so drastic in Morgan and Berkeley counties that he felt he had to go on the record. He went on Metro News and said, listen, I am dreadfully concerned. I am losing sleep at night that something awful is going to happen out here because we don't have anyone filling these positions. But at that point, it's oftentimes too little too late when you've just refused to fill positions, when you refuse to pay competitive salaries, all in the name of trying to make room for an artificial surplus to create the illusion that West Virginia can afford to hand out these hundreds of millions of dollars to the wealthy.
Let me ask you about the wealthy. I got a lot of questions I could ask you, but since you ended on that one, we're not Connecticut. There's a millionaire or a billionaire, you know, in nearly every county, sometimes more than one. And, on the other hand, and I think my folk wisdom has it that Jim Justice is our only billionaire, and he's the governor. Maybe there's more than one. I don't know. But we're, the wealth, on the other hand, we produce as much wealth per capita as I think we're like third or fourth among the states in terms of, you know, how much we export or sell out, you know, basically natural resources. And yet, so who do, I mean, where would be the source of state revenue that could fund a school system in the Eastern Panhandle that would be competitive with Loudoun County, Virginia, and Washington County, Maryland? Where is the source of funds that could make that kind of investment? But where is that?
I mean, I think that I can think of a couple of progressive forms of revenue. You know, a 3% surcharge on all income over $150,000. We looked into that at one point. It brings in just, I think it's over $100 million.
There you go.
Steadily every single year. The bottom line too is that our severance taxes are far too low in this state.
You've cut them.
Yeah. We've cut severance taxes in the past. You know, if you want West Virginia coal, if you want West Virginia natural gas, you have to take it from West Virginia. We should be cashing in. And really, in a lot of ways, this is kind of the story, like the villain origin story of West Virginia, if you will, is that we have for 150 years, really, no matter who's been in charge, we have never truly taken advantage of our mineral wealth. You know, 5%, I actually think it's less on coal now, but, you know, the severance taxes in West Virginia are far too low. And despite what industry would have you believe, price really doesn't have anything to do with demand when it comes to coal and natural gas. It's demand that drives price. And we've seen that over the last 18 months with the war in Ukraine, right?
Right.
I hate that this is the situation, but, you know, the war in Ukraine has basically made West Virginia natural gas a much hotter commodity, right? It's been far more in demand because people can't get natural gas elsewhere. Therefore, the price went up significantly. So those are two areas. Another one that I think that West Virginia has a competitive advantage that would be a great revenue generator is what's referred to as excess acreage. And because in West Virginia, we have a lot of land holding companies, specifically coal and timber companies, that have massive tracts of land that they don't do anything with. They just, you know, you have, you know, tens of thousands of acres that is on a planned, you know, 100-year cut schedule for timber, right? And it doesn't get developed. It doesn't do anything. But yet it just it's taxed at just this minuscule level. We should be taxing that land much, much higher. We should be putting that to work for the people of West Virginia, right? So, you know, if you are, for instance, like a West Vaco, or, you know, Black Hawk Mining, and you're not going to pick up your land and go somewhere else.
No,
right? That's
you're not
how it works, right? Land's the only thing you're not making anything more of, right? So to me, and this is a very easy way to generate, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars and put those dollars back into West Virginia by investing in competitive salaries and competitive benefits so we can continue to retain the best and the brightest when it comes to not just teachers, but our school service personnel and state employees that do really important work and make West Virginia a place that people want to live. Contrary to the hype, John Scott, nobody moves to a state because of the tax rate.
That's absolutely
bananas. People do move to states for things like quality schools.
They do
for like good broadband and things like that, and you've got to have money to make those things happen.
That's exactly right.
Okay, but let me. Do you think that what does the state have the authority? In your view, I mean, there's a lot of federal regulations involved here and stuff, and in terms of these out of state interests that own those huge tracts of land and coal and natural resources. So if the state had the authority of, let's say, Norway, state of West Virginia here, and it could reorganize all the leases, you know, and the and basically establish a different regime. That someone would call that, you know, a socialist revolution in West Virginia, I'm sure, if you tried to do any part of that. And but on the other hand, I don't see quite how we get to those kind of reforms you're talking about without a really pretty big structural change in how the natural resources are administered in the state and for who. You know, especially given the balance of interest with climate change interest, which is going to ultimately want to reduce fossil fuels. But on the other hand, you know, you have the whole world runs. If your solution is turn everybody's lights off, that ain't going to work. Okay, so you've got a balance of interest that's going to persist for a considerable amount of time. And how can West Virginia get the authority to use these resources to pull themselves up? Because I do not think a big white knight is coming over the horizon to save us. I don't think that's going to happen.
I mean, I think to your point, John, that is something that we need to be more vocal about, especially with the writing which has been on the wall, the writing that only gets brighter. At this point, it's like Banksy graffiti, more or less saying that the days of coal and natural gas are numbered, which in my mind is all the more reason to cash in for the state as much as possible, right? There were legislative interim meetings down at Marshall earlier this month, and JPM, the big power grid provider, put up what they see as the future. And right. Do you know what their future for coal is? 10 years, 20 years from now? It's not any more than what it is right now. I mean, so far as I could tell, the big dogs, the people who are in charge of providing energy, I forget how many states JPM's in charge of, but they are forecasting really no more coal added to the base right. power load. Everything additional is renewable. And so in my mind, now is the time not to allow the coal barons to continue to take West Virginia for a ride and fleece us even more. Now's the time That's to really cash in, to double, triple that severance tax, knowing full well that the days are truly numbered.
Good right? Yeah, but that'll never happen.
Scott, Scott, did you have your hand raised?
I'll say it's a lift. I'm not going to say it's never going to happen, but it is a lift.
Hold on. Scott, did you have your hand raised?
And did you see the report?
Hey, JB.
No.
Oh, okay. I thought you did.
Did you see the report that came out, the downstream strategies yesterday? It was released on public radio.
I did not.
Oh, yeah. It's a great report on the West Virginia PSC and how they've been, given price increases, rate increases to the utilities. Since 2005, they have doubled our utility rates, and it's the highest rate of increase in the nation.
And they're asking for another one, aren't they?
Right. Oh yeah. Yeah.
And
why
they
not?
Just didn't they just get one this month or something?
Yeah. Yeah. They're gonna try for another one. You're right. And we're paying not to burn coal. We're paying not to burn it.
The your article on the volunteer fire departments, Seth, indicated that one of the big uncovered costs for the departments is just the fuel for the fire trucks, right? Because the inflation in the cost of fuels, was not, these flat budgets, like you said, that didn't cover any of it, right? Okay. And there's a lot of that where the inflation has sort of gone pervasive through the entire economy, right? And you have certain things that are persisting now. Do you have so you think we could raise the price of coal and therefore pay for even under maybe existing laws, pay for a much increased revenue? Is there a constituency for that? I mean, why are the Republicans getting elected all the time?
I mean, I think that there is potentially a constituency for, and this may take some time to really, you know, build out. You know, this probably isn't something that's going to happen this year or next year. But I do think that there's some traction, you know, albeit small at this point, for revenue that is what we call in the tax game exportable. Exportability refers to more or less the amount of people who aren't from your state, like the percentage of people who aren't from your state that are paying into your state revenue coffers, right? So when about like the sales tax in West Virginia isn't very exportable. That is largely borne by people from West Virginia, right?
Right.
But severance taxes are extremely exportable. You know, severance taxes aren't really paid by anyone, maybe a handful of people. But on the whole, severance taxes on coal and natural gas are paid by folks who aren't from here, right? Those companies, those boards of directors are headquartered largely not just outside of West Virginia, but outside the country as well, like big multinational firms.
Sure.
So I do think that there is some appetite or just some interest. Eventually, there's going to be honest with you, because what the governor has done on top of what has happened in the past 15 years in West Virginia with, you know, the reduction of the corporate net income tax and the elimination of the business franchise tax, we are either going to have to find money or West Virginia is going to become quite unrecognizable in a matter of just a couple of years.
And, wow.
You know, what I'm talking about here is, you know, what the governor, Governor Justice since 2017 has been trying to eliminate the personal income tax. This year, he managed to get a 21%+ reduction through. There are triggers that, you know, will ultimately eliminate the full personal income. That's $2 billion. But just even at $800 million, that's an $800 million hole. That's on top of flat budgets that have left needs pent up across state agencies.
Right.
I'm sure you've heard about just the absolute deplorable conditions in our jails and prisons. That is a direct result of the massive understaffing, right? Our child welfare crisis is a direct result of incredible understaffing at DHHR. And then on top of that, to make matters worse, over the past couple of years, the legislature has passed legislation that will require West Virginia to find $700 million for things like the HOPE Scholarship expansion, for things like the Third Grade Success Act, for changes to PEIA that are going to cost, you know,
that's the insurance,
you know, so they're going to have to find $700 million. They're going to have $800 million less to work with.
Wow.
And that doesn't even get into having to address the pent up needs and just the unmet needs that communities are facing across the state because of these budget gimmicks that the governor has been insistent on using for the past couple of years. So I think what do they say? Necessity is the mother of invention. You know, essentially, like the people in charge are going to have to get serious about paying bills at some point. Otherwise, you're going to have maybe two institutions of higher learning left. WVU and with an $800 million, like, you know, even upwards of a $1 billion hole to fill, you know, most, if not all institutions, smaller institutions of higher learning will not survive.
Shepherd.
State parks gone. You know, wow. Your extension services, forget about it. Community health clinics, even, you know, large hospitals. You know, it gets ugly pretty quickly, guys.
Okay. Scott, you do have your hand up now.
Yes, I do.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I'm trying to remember. What's the name of the miners union?
President?
United Mine Workers.
Huh?
United Mine Workers of America.
Cecil.
Cecil Roberts. Oh, yeah.
Cecil Roberts.
Yeah.
I can't keep things straight.
This is Geezer Radio here. Okay. all of us, forget. You got to help us out, everybody.
Cecil, you know, I've met him and talked to him, and I know that he's a member of a climate change group, it's called Labor for Sustainability or something like that.
Yeah, that's what it is.
And Labor for Sustainability. And he, you know, he's a coal miner. He comes out of coal, and yet he really understands that that can't work and that it has to change. And one of the questions I have is that with all of this land that these coal companies own all over the place, it seems like that that would be a good fight to take that land and convert it to solar panel usage, so that you could get the same energy going without having to take more coal. And anyway, I just wanted to see what you think about that, because it, to me, it just seems very, very important that somebody like Cecil is also, and also, you know, what is, how is the union fighting in this situation? That's it.
Well, Seth, yeah, go ahead, Seth.
I will do my best to try and address the question and the inherent issues. I mean, I think that, I mean, when we talk about, like, you know, what to do with land impacted by coal mining, and how we kind of look at these issues kind of in a 360 degree lens, if you will, you know, we've been a big proponent and a big advocate for things like the Reclaim Act, and mine reclamation work, especially, you know, not just in the southern coal fields, but there's a lot of it to be done all over West Virginia. And to the extent that it is environmentally friendly, it is. This is work that needs to be done. You know, coal mining is hard on the environment, as we all know. Mine reclamation work is work that can kind of mitigate the damage to water, the damage to, you know, floodplains and things like that, that can help communities, not only through the jobs that are produced themselves, right? You know, mine reclamation work, you know, sponsored by the federal government, pays well. It involves benefits, and it keeps people working, and it gets important work that needs to get done, right? You know, to that point, I think that, you know, that is a pretty critical step. I know that there were some dollars set aside in the Inflation Reduction Act for that. The last I heard, there were upwards, I think, of like possibly like $10 billion just in like pre-1976 mine reclamation that could be done in West Virginia if the money and the willpower were found. That, you know, involves the same skill set that a lot of coal miners already have. There's another advantageous thing about mine reclamation work is that you don't have to train a coal miner how to reclaim abandoned coal mines. They already know how to do things like, you know, diesel mechanics, how to operate heavy equipment, how to do earth moving and grading and those types of things.
Electricians.
Yeah, absolutely. And so like a lot of the labor force that is needed to do that work is already here. So, you know, here at the center, we see that as kind of a natural next step when we think about kind of the transition away from fossil fuels into an economy and a West Virginia that not only is, you know, ready for a sustainable future, but one that does right by the workers who have, you know, for decades and actually not just decades, for a century and a half, have, you know, floated West Virginia's economy and, you know, in many ways created the energy that has powered the nation, right? Like one of the big questions I think people find themselves struggling with is how do you create quote unquote, you got to be careful how you say this, because a lot of people consider it a real dog whistle, a just transition for coal miners. Well, that doesn't mean taking somebody who is making $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 a year working in the mines and then giving them a job that pays $12 an hour to drive an ambulance. That's not fair in my book. You know what I mean?
No, like, it isn't. We talked about that, but I wanted to answer Scott's question earlier about putting solar panels on those reclaimed mine sites. We have a bill, and Seth is aware of it, that Evan Hansen put out years ago that does just that. So that you were spot on there, Scott. And the problem is they don't do it. They don't use it. And they get all kinds of tax credits, but what they're not going to shoot themselves in the foot. You know, we still live under the illusion that coal is king. You know, coal is king in West Virginia, and it's ridiculous. It's totally ridiculous, in my opinion. But Seth, you did a very good job of outlining the situation we have here in West Virginia, with people having the wool pull over their eyes every day. And you said it was tough on the land, mining, coal mining, but it's also tough on the people. It's tough on the miners. You know, they get all kinds of disease, and the mines blow up, and, you know, guys like Don Blankenship get, you know, 1 year in jail or 6 months or whatever for killing all those miners. It's going to take a long time, in my opinion, for things to change in West Virginia, simply because it's been like this for so long. You know, it's like a ship trying to turn, and it takes hours and hours for a ship to make a circle. And that's kind of the ship of state of West Virginia needs to do that. But it takes political will. It takes intelligence on the voters, and we just don't have it. We don't have it here. Nobody cares. They don't even vote. How many people voted in the primary, Seth?
I don't know.
Yeah, and the primary is actually what determines what goes on here now, you know, with the Republican majority, supermajority. So I think it's a tough situation. I'll continue to live here because it's just beautiful. I really love being here, so close to everything on the East Coast. We got to go up and visit Scott up in Chicago, though, John.
We got to do a road trip.
Seth, you have Chicago roots too, right?
Yep. I don't know. I don't have Chicago roots. I was in Chicago recently. I love Chicago. Chicago's a great town.
Let's just don't go in January.
I don't want to go in January. I was there in January for a month once, and, you know, I froze standing on the
baby.
L.
Summertime.
You know, I mean, I just I became rigid waiting for the train on the L there in January one time. Just, you know.
We do have some problems, but back to the question of just transition. You know, I think that everybody that's fighting for that, or at least most of the people fighting for that, recognize that I know it's true with the president of the union, that a just transition means that you get the same kind of pay that you got in the mine. And so a lot of people who are fighting for that are making that a part of their demand for a just transition. And I just think that's that garners a lot of support from unions and all of that. So anyway, I just wanted to make that clear.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to reinforce. I mean, like, it is a critical component of you know, what is getting ready to happen anyway, right? I mean, Cole's days, we've said this, people have been forecasting this for a while, and they've been right. You know, if not for some geopolitical things, and not for, President Biden, I believe, putting out a preference for American steel, we'd have even fewer coal jobs right now in West Virginia than we would. But the writing is on the wall, to the point where, you know, international, you know, brokers of energy are basically saying we are going renewable. That's where we are headed. President Biden has laid down some pretty stringent, proposed rules on coal ash, on coal-fired power plants. And now is the time, you know, for West Virginia to be proactive in realizing that, you know, we can either be at, you know, the front of the, you know, we can be at the table or on the menu, as they say, right? When it comes to the future of not just coal communities in the southern coal fields, but coal communities all across the state, Marshall County, Ohio County, Randolph County, where I'm from, you know, Barber County, those types of places. I was in Grafton last week talking about, you know, the state budget and these budget gimmicks and things like that. Their number one employer in Taylor County is a coal mine. And they fully admit that they've maybe got about 10 years left.
Did you see our friend?
I did not see our friend.
Oh, that's too bad.
Okay. But, who's the friend?
Manny Penny.
Oh, yeah, I know, sure. Great guy. Yeah.
That's where he lives. He lives in. He's been on the show plenty of times.
Yeah. You know, well, the coal mining and the union jobs pay, I think they're some of the highest industrial jobs paid in the country right now.
Yep.
Aren't they? And also, and at, yep. And so if you're going to make a transition of no loss in pay, which is, that's, you know, if you were going to visit any union hall in the country and you ask the members what would be a just transition, that's certainly what they would say, okay? On the other hand, the jobs that pay what the coal mining, the union coal mining are all mostly tech jobs, I would say right now. Not all, but most. And so you need to have a community, at least at the community college level, you know, or maybe, and more connected, I think, to apprentice programs too, really, in a way, you know, investments that, that make this transition possible and not just a hype, okay? I mean, really possible, that you can move people from one industry to another. And since almost every trade now, I mean, how many trades are not impacted by computer technology at this point? I mean, there are still some, but a lot not, you know? And so you're going to make, the transition is not going to be as difficult now as it was 20 years ago. You know, so that's your, but but you have to have a big investment in education. And that's, if you were going to start in West Virginia, you'd have to start there, wouldn't you? I mean, at a, your fundamental deficit you got is human capital. People are leaving the state, okay? And you have the worst, second, third worst education system in the country, performance-wise. So that's where you got to make a real change. And whether you, otherwise, you don't even have a value proposition to make, really, other than these natural resources, which are, you don't own any of. It's all owned by outsiders. How are you going to take it away from them? I see a classic Marxist problem here. Anyway, but I don't see too many Marxists around in the state either. So anyway, I don't know how we, I just having a hard time seeing how we get out of it without the whole thing falling on its face. In a way, you know, it's like now I think we appear to be a corpse to a bunch of vultures that are circling, you know, and are going to come in via the Koch brothers or some other, you know, outfit, you know, with an agenda to, you know, take all the property and leave it just like a third world colony as far as the people go. I don't know. That's, I guess I'm verging
on. John, how are we doing on time, brother?
Oh, we're almost there. We're about 37 minutes, but we're right. But I'm verging on JB's, you know, dismal outlook.
Hey, anyway. I hate to be the guy, you know, at the party, but you know, you got to be realist, you know, and that's why Seth is so good, because he looks at it between the lines, and he brings us the truth instead of what we get on. You know, right. The media here in the Fox media in West Virginia.
Oh,
I mean, it's ridiculous.
Good Lord. Yeah.
And all he's right. going to be running against Manchin. You know, this governor's going to be running against Manchin with baby dog. He's going to be parading around the state with a dog, right? And the people love the dog more than they like him. But they'll vote for him because of the dog.
I think Manchin's going to vote, going to run for president, and he's going to endorse. Justice for the Senate seat, for his Senate seat. That's what I think. What do you think?
You know, back to the. Geez, now I already forgot what I was going to say.
Jeez.
We'll come back.
So Seth, you got any, are you guys are non-political, right, officially, so but you don't want to comment on these possible scenarios with
Yeah, we don't venture into the electoral world here at the center.
Right,
you know,
right.
what we do is, you know, we do our best to give people the facts and you know, the analysis in a way that, you know, is relatable to your everyday life. You know, at the end of the day, taxes and budget, while they are kind of boring, and while some people try to make them more complicated than what they are, they impact everything you see around you. You know, there are real consequences when we refuse to fund our fire departments and emergency squads properly, right? We, you know, when we don't give them, you know, the funding that they need to provide services, that is, that comes at a serious cost to communities across West Virginia. That is tax and budget at work, right? Like, that is right before your very eyes. When we have hiring freezes and we have budget gimmicks that you know, refuse to allow West Virginia to offer competitive salaries to public workers who do incredibly important things, right? These are hardworking folks who are out there, you know, when, you know, filling the potholes and fixing the bridges and doing things like that.
Mm-hmm.
When we just refuse, you know, as a state, you know, not just us, but the governor specifically, refuses to hire folks in the name of trying to drive up these artificial surpluses, that comes at a cost too. And so, you know, our role in all of this, I think that, you know, number one, we don't really get involved at all in the electoral side of things. But if you find yourself skeptical when the governor is trying to, if you know other people who are skeptical, we are here to support you with data. Your skepticism is well warranted, I guess is what we would say, West Virginia.
Okay.
We are here to help you connect the dots so that when if anyone tries to convince you or tries to make you believe that things are going so well in West Virginia, you are in a strong position to push back and say, well, actually, no, they're not.
You know, Steph, I just want to thank you so much, you know, for joining the West Virginia budget and policy priorities you guys have been soldiers for so long and reliable. You know, I know, you know, we've used your resources, you know, many times in controversies that go on, and it's just it's amazing. I'm so glad that you guys are keeping it going. You have a great team, you know, there. That's been a long time. It's time for Good and Welfare, folks. And I see that Scott has his hand raised. Maybe he remembered what he was going to say. This has been the Labor Beat Radio Show on Enlighten Radio, and we've been interviewing Seth DiPisano. From West Virginia Budget and Policy Priorities.
He can't pronounce his name.
Well, then, you know, I'm from West Virginia. I don't say things right sometimes, okay?
DiStefano. Don't stop. Just say DiStefano.
Okay, thank you. JB, Good and Welfare.
Please. Yeah, I just wanted to say that on technology and how technology impacts this. Yes, to what everybody's saying about education and all of that. And also to realize that technology is taking over all kinds of jobs, new jobs. And there's going to be, you know, we're going to need all kinds of people trained. You know, you just look at AI, you know, one of the biggest, perhaps the biggest apprenticeship in the country right now is for robot repair. Why? Because so much stuff is done by robots now. And another one is about AI and understanding AI and being able to program AI. So, I mean, we're moving in that direction already, and we can't, We can't ignore that. That's a part of where the working class is going, and we have to be with them.
JB, Good and Welfare.
Well said. Yeah, I just hope West Virginia wakes up, you know, because we're going to be left behind. We're going to be left behind holding the coal bucket, you know, and everybody else is going to thrive. The one thing we have in our favor is our location, you know, being in the Mid-Atlantic, close to New York and all the major financial centers, Philadelphia, Baltimore, D.C., it's an advantage for us, but we're not taking advantage of it right now. I'd like to see more of that, and I'd like to see more money go to education because that's the key. And I want to thank Seth for giving us his morning, and would encourage him to come back when we need them all the time. You're doing a great job, Seth. Keep up the good work, buddy.
All right.
Yes. Okay. Yes. I am hopeful to make it to the Eastern Panhandle either in late June or sometime in July for some like community-minded town meetings to talk about this type of stuff. So,
well, we'd love to host you and treat you to a fine dinner in Shepherdstown. Okay.
Appreciate that. Thank you all so much.
All right. Take care, everybody. It's late, but everything comes next. Bye-bye.